You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 22nd of May, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I am joined by the producer of the Aryan Spring 2 channel, Subal. Subal, how are you doing on this bright, sunny summer's day?
Oh, I got to say, I'm really, really happy, Sven. I went into the shop today, and I saw these beautiful photos of Pippa Middleton. She's just got married, and it just it fills my heart with pride, and I'm feeling extremely patriotic. But
what a pride and joy to see these bankers' children playing, and wonderful stuff, isn't it?
I think she's a good Christian. That's what I think. She had a nice Christian. Christian wedding, and she's a real credit to the nation. God bless her, Pippa Middleton.
wasn't the mother's name Goldsmith or something like that?
No.
I think there
Kate
might be
Middleton's
some...
from a working class family, and it's like Prince Charming and God, I don't know.
Prince Charming and Widow Twankey.
Yeah.
It's interesting you bring up these fairy stories there or folklore, just as an aside. A lot of the bad guys in all those folk tales that we used to tell, they're all Jews. Rumpelstiltskin. Trying to get a white baby, wasn't he? That was his payment. And the trolls that would be under the bridge demanding money. From these, which is basically the toll booth, and all those toll booths were manned by Jews. So much of our old folklore, the enemy or the bad guy was a code word for the Jew, basically.
So you're saying that? Well, that's quite ironic, isn't it? Seeing as, you know, now the alt-right is a troll army, kind of, you know, we've taken a word that was based around a Jew.
Yeah, it is a bit of a strange one, that, isn't it? Not quite sure where the word troll actually comes from, unless it's from the troll under the bridge with a fishing rod with bait on the end of the hook, trying to find something that's going to go after the bait. Maybe that's what it is.
Don't know. Seeing as we're talking about random factoids, I just made a video called what did I do? I did an old. I like doing film reviews, so I did a film review of a what's it called? Guardians of the Galaxy. And actually, this random factoid has nothing to do with that at all. But I put this random factoid in there. But anyway, random factoids. The word zombie comes from voodoo, right? And voodoo comes from Haiti. And if you read M.S. King, who did a book called Planet Rothschild, which I think is very good, he says that the word, it became a voodoo thing because there was a black Jacobin called Jean Zombie. And he basically, you know, when they were slaughtering all the whites, he basically dragged some white guy into the market square and just gutted him in front of everybody. And so he became a hero because of that. And that's the origin of the word zombie. So that maybe that's why they are promoting so many zombie movies, because the Jews obviously understand that there's power within words. And if the word has this kind of strange, you know, origin, then it kind of emanates throughout the whole thing. I don't know, but interesting factoid.
I think they like to just push things. They like to play with us. They know that the zombie movies are like the invasion that we're experiencing at the moment from the third world. So they like to make these zombie movies laughing all the time, thinking these dumb goyim don't realise that this is exactly what's happening to them. And people go out dressed up as zombies, pretending to be shooting zombies, watching all these zombie movies, when they should really be going out there and defending our country from this invasion. I think that's a large part of it as well. People know that we should be defending something, so they want to go and watch a film where people are defending themselves against invasion.
Yeah. Well, before I got red-pilled, I used to think that the whole zombie thing was basically getting ready for people to be genocided. Because, I was into Alex Jones, and he's into this whole, Georgia Stone. You know, the Georgia Stones, the population of the world should not rise above 500 million. And that famous documentary he did, Endgame, and it's all about, the elites genociding us. Anyway, but if you think about it, zombies, what are they? They're like the horde of unarmed, sick people, right? And they're humans, right? Kind of, well, not really, but unarmed, sick people that are hungry and looking for food. And, you just shoot them down. So my theory behind zombie movies was always that they were just going to keep it going until people got used to the idea of just shooting unarmed people.
I think the problem with that theory that they're trying to wipe out humanity, get rid of large portions of humanity, is that every chance that comes along, like Ebola, to get rid of millions of us, they want to go over there and set up hospitals and develop a vaccine and do all they can to stop large amounts of Negroes dying out. Yet when it comes to replacing white people and doing their best to stop us from increasing our birth rate, they'll do everything they possibly can against that. So it's not a plan to get rid of a large percentage of the world's population. It's a plan to get rid of the white population. That's all it is.
Yeah. Or just get rid of the whites first and then cull the population. That's what I reckon they'll do. That's my theory. I think they'll probably do it with the genetically modified food, and which has been shown. They feed this stuff to rats, and after 2-3 generations, they're infertile. In my opinion, if you want to kill large amounts of the population, you just cut off the food supply, right? Just like they did in the Ukraine in the Holodomor. So, crush Europe, and then, they probably have to beat China next, crush them, and then just mess up the food supply and everyone will just die. Because you think about it, there's only 20 million, how many Jews? 25 million, something like that. So if they want to rule over a planet of 7 billion, it's kind of difficult. It would make sense for them to cull the population at some point. But after they've destroyed Europe, I think it's probably their plan.
I think their plan all along, I think impurity is against purity, and evil is against good, and black is against white. And I think these Jews are mongrels. They hate everything that's pure. They hate everything that's right. So they just instinctively want to wipe out white people. And I think we see this with non-whites, mulattoes, mixed race people anyway. They may claim to not be like that. They may claim to support white people, but every one of them would rather go with the lighter skinned partner than they actually are. So they, in an attempt to lighten the skin of their offspring, in a desperate attempt to try and turn themselves white again. So even if it's not a negative, even if they're not thinking, well, I want to wipe out the white race, that is what they end up doing. And then you end up with a whole nation turning brown. You end up with a nation of Brazilians, which started out white.
Yeah.
And the most recent one.
I think it's kind of a breeding strategy as well, isn't it? Because if you can't compete intellectually, then the idea is to sort of destroy instead, right? If you don't have the IQ to compete with somebody who's smarter than you, with a race of people that's smarter than you, then you just drag them down into the mud, and then it's an even playing field, if you like. But I've definitely seen that. I've seen that in India a lot, actually. The Indians are very, this is one of the first things I recognized living in India. It's just the utter hypocrisy that they, they're very proud to be Hindu, but at the same time, they all want to move to America. It's just such a, it really got my nerves after a while. But yeah, you do see that. They want to destroy us. It's true.
No, I think there's the hiring of the IQ as well. It's not just the fact that they want to lighten their skin, but they know that if somebody has a lighter colour skin, they're more likely to be intelligent, more intelligent, and you get a colour gradient in these countries. Like in India, the lighter coloured ones will be at the top and the darker coloured ones will be at the bottom of the class. And the same in Brazil. The whitest people are at the top of all the different classes. And the darkest people are at the bottom. And I think they call it colorism instead of racism. They call it colorism. And this happens everywhere. The brightest people are the whitest people. So if you were to be non-white, you're instinctively going to know that. And you're going to think your children are going to have a better chance of making it if you breed with someone with lighter colored skin.
Yeah. So it's color coded. I lived in Brazil for a while, actually. A lot of Jews in Rio. My God, a lot of Jews in Rio de Janeiro. I can't believe it. That country's really just crippled by cocaine. It's such a huge mess. I can't believe it. We should do a whole podcast in Brazil one day. That would be interesting. We could just talk about that. But, oh, my God, yeah, what a mess.
Well, we have talked about it before, haven't we? You spoke about the helicopter gunship, and we've seen what happens in Brazil with the Olympics when they're swimming around in sewage in the swimming pool and all the shootings that went off and people getting killed, journalists getting shot at.
I will say, like, on the side of Brazil, there isn't as much racial baiting or racial conflict, so to speak, as there is in America, because they're more mixed, and because I don't know, I think probably because it's Catholic, and so one of the things I really liked about Brazil is that everybody believed in God, just about, or they were very respectful to religion, which is something which I really liked, and I believe it is because it's Catholic, and all of South America is the same, so there are a lot of good things there, obviously, but oh my God, the violence, the endless violence. It's just awful. So, yeah, it's very unfortunate.
And that's what's in store for anywhere.
I think South Brazil would be nice, though.
That's what's in store for anywhere that allows itself to become browned out, basically. London is already incredibly violent. Acid attacks every day, stabbings every day. Horrific crimes that are going on there. Areas that are now completely non-white, no white faces whatsoever. You don't even hear English being spoken. And that's what's in store for all the white countries that allow in this flood of immigrants. Just in London at the moment, one of these things that I've got here on my list to talk about, the Muslims have been told that they're going to go to hell if they don't vote Labour in Stoke. This is the sort of mentality of the people that we're bringing in. They're being told who to vote for, and they're being told they'll go to hell if they don't, and they're believing this.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't know anything about the political system. They just know it's us against them, and they see the Tory party as just being an old white racist party, and I wish it was, but unfortunately it isn't. And so they're always going to vote for the left wing. I suppose that's the first level when you're taking the red pill, isn't it? That's the first realization that you get, is that the first explanation that you give people, isn't it? I use that one a lot when I talk to normies, that why are all these immigrants, why are they coming into the country? Oh, it's because the left wing, you know, and they vote for the left wing, so they bring them in. And it's kind of true. It is true. But obviously, like, there's a deeper meaning behind it, which is, you know, the Jewish question and white genocide. But, both things are true at the same time. The Democrats in America, they know that the immigrants will vote for them. And the Blairites, you know, the Labour Party in England, they know the same thing. The non-whites will vote for them and join their party.
And what seems to be a bit strange, you know, they're voting for the left, they're voting for the Labour Party, and yet something like 80 or 90% of them want to see Sharia law in Britain. And Sharia law is quite different to the Labour Party, although there does seem to be a white Sharia meme going around at the moment, and I know you wanted to talk a bit about that, Subhan. I'm quite interested to hear about this. I've read a couple of articles on it, but perhaps you could explain it, and then maybe we could discuss it a bit.
You want me to explain why it's Sharia? Okay. Well, I mean, I guess we should talk about it because everybody else is talking about it. So, you know, what is white Sharia? As far as I understand it, the meme started with a podcast called the War Room, I think they're called. A bunch of Americans, I think ex-military. A pretty funny podcast. And it started off as a joke about white rape gangs, I think. I'm pretty sure that's how it started. And then it seems that the Daily Stormer picked it up after, basically after Donald Trump bombed Syria and everybody was upset. And, you know, Andrew Anglin started saying, oh, flipping fed up with electoral politics and what we're going to do. So he started pushing the white Sharia meme. And it's just, and basically the Daily Storm has been pushing it ever since. So that was the origin. And I got to say, I don't, you know, obviously agree with the white rape gang meme. I don't agree with that kind of extreme rhetoric. And I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about it. I think it is an interesting meme because it kind of forces people to confront the fact that we're being conquered by Islam, and we're being conquered by Islam because Islam is stronger than us, because Islam has a right-wing culture which is more extreme and more dominant than us, and specifically it's a culture which dominates its women, and the men in that culture just don't allow their women to control them or to influence their society in any way. And it forces people to contrast, to face that fact. And the way that the way that Andre lays it out is he says it's either a choice. It's either we develop our own white Sharia or the Muslims will impose their Sharia on us. And I think he's got a good point. We need to have a return to some kind of European system of law. We did a very interesting article recently on the Daily Stormer called what was it called? Just What Are Traditional Gender Roles? And he talks about a legal term called coverture, which basically the concept was that when a woman, she marries her husband, that husband has complete legal control over her. So she's not allowed to sign a contract without her husband. She can't own a house without her husband. She can't get a job without her husband, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She's basically owned by her husband. And this was the standard in European culture for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. And then, and this was the first thing that the women's right movement targeted and destroyed, even before universal suffrage. And it's a good point, I think. Women, you know, we've allowed them freedom and they're just running around amok and destroying our culture. So, yeah, there are a lot of things that I think are good. One of the reasons which I always liked, why I always liked the Daily Stormer, was because it confronted the feminist issue. So there are a lot of things about the meme which I like. But there are a lot of problems with it as well, as in, like, you know, joking about white rape gangs, which is just retarded, to be perfectly honest with you. And just generally, you know, hating women and talking about punching them in the face and this kind of thing. I mean, I'm all in favor of shaming sluts like, what was that lady called? Goldilocks? No, Moldilocks. I'm all in favor of that. But to shame white nationalist women is, slightly problematic, because if you want to psychologically manipulate anybody, you have to use a stick and a carrot, not just a stick. So we've talked about this before, Sven. I think we need to promote women like Blonde Buttermaker, who is married, and I think, I don't know if she has a kid or not, but anyway, at least she's married and she's doing white nationalist videos. You have a wife with a purpose. She's married. She has kids. She's talking about white nationalism, kind of. We need to promote women like that. And we need to say to women that if you want to be popular and accepted in our, and respected in our group, then this is what you should do, right? So that's the carrot. And then you use the stick to encourage women to do that. But if you're only using a stick and just calling everybody a thot, right, then people are just going to reject you. So, and also there's the other problem, which Beardson pointed out, which is just that I don't know if white America is going to accept this kind of meme. I mean, it's an effective meme in the alt-right to trigger people and get them talking about this issue. The feminist issue, but I don't know if white America's going to accept it. In fact, I think they definitely won't. So anyway, it's an interesting meme. I don't know. What do you think, Sven?
Well, yeah, a couple of things that come to mind there. I'm not sure what the Blonde Buttermaker would make of it. Rape gangs and punching women and all those sort of things. I'm not sure it's likely to entice women to be more like the Blonde Buttermaker. I think it might turn a lot of women off seeing stuff like that. Sharia law itself, we have our own law. We have our own common law. We have our own Christian law that our laws are based upon. And the Sharia law is like a rip-off from that anyway. It's a rip-off from the Old Testament and a rip-off from the Talmud. That's what the Quran is. So I don't really see the benefit in latching ourselves onto something that's Islamic, calling it Sharia law, white Sharia, when we could be calling for our own law, our own common law, just going back to common law. I mean, we have a tradition where right up until last century, you could never take a man's children from him, because to do that was to unman a man. And you can never unman a man. You can't take his house, you can't take the tools of his trade, and you can't take his children. And children that died would be buried on top of the man, on top of the father, not the mother. Somehow this all got changed around a century ago. So I don't really see the benefit in calling it white Sharia, because if it's as you say, we're losing out to Islam because they have these traditions and they're strongly traditional, then we should be looking back to our traditions. Because their traditions are not our traditions. That seems a bit disingenuous to me. And I saw Wee's article, and I think he makes a mistake there about women being property once you're married. When he's talking about rape and marital rape, it's impossible to have marital rape because the woman is the property of the man. That's not the reason why there isn't marital rape. There are marriage vows. And when the woman takes her marriage vow to serve her husband, she is giving her consent. And when the man takes his vow to honor, cherish, and obey, or whatever it is, the woman, he is saying that he will be responsible. He won't do anything that's against her interests. So each one is giving their consent to have sex, basically, with that marriage vow. That's what it is. It's saying, yeah, I consent to having sex whenever you want it. That's why it couldn't be rape, because the consent had been given in that vow, and the vow itself, that wasn't the marriage. That was just the marriage vow. The actual marriage itself was the marriage act. It was the act of consummating the marriage. This is why virginity was so highly prized. A marriage was between two virgins. Taking somebody's virginity was marriage. So majority of people now are adulterers, but if you look at people that they really don't like to do any research into this area, but you can look at it when it says looking at marriages between first loves. But people that actually did get married when they were virgins are immeasurably much more likely to stay together for the rest of their life because they married when they were virgins. And that is the ideal. And again, it's this consent thing. So those are some of the issues that I've had with it. And I saw some other stuff as well about inject people should inject themselves with testosterone. That's really not a good idea, because if you inject yourself with testosterone and you've got more testosterone than your body produces naturally, the likelihood is that your body will then turn it into estrogen and you'll grow breasts. And this happened to the guy that came up with the Enigma machine that decoded the German messages during the war. He was homosexual and they ended up giving him lots of testosterone and it's half turned him into a woman. It had the opposite effect. I wouldn't advise people injecting themselves with testosterone. Anyway.
Right.
But yeah, those are some of my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know anything about I don't know anything about steroids or anything about that. I mean, I do think that Andrew Anglin has a point when he talks about this idea that low testosterone men are more likely to be vote for the left wing, and high testosterone men are more likely to vote for the right wing. I mean, I think that's generally accepted. I don't know if, maybe he's half joking, half serious about the testosterone thing. I'm not sure. I think he actually did write about this, saying that he was kind of joking. Basically men need to do push-ups and men need to exercise and men need to get physically in shape and raise your testosterone level naturally. And then you're going to be, you'll develop more of a right-wing nature. So, I think the testosterone joke was just a joke. But, I'm not 100%. Like I say, when he started the White Sharia meme, I thought I was actually really in favor of it. I thought it was a really good idea. But at that time, I wasn't aware of the whole rape gang thing. And I'm not really, I don't know. Like I read the Iliad, for example. And actually, interestingly enough, the whole of the Iliad is around the king. Oh, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Agamemnon, is it?
Agamemnon steals I'm trying to think of a word other than sex slave. Achilles is female concubine. Slave.
Concubine.
Yeah, but how did he get her? He got her because he killed her husband and then took her as his woman. And he did kind of fall in love with her and want to marry her, but it just it does go to show that there could be an Aryan culture of, I don't know, killing your enemies and stealing their wives. I'm not against that, but the idea of a rape gang, like a gang of men raping one woman, I don't know. I mean, this just sounds like Negro behavior, to be honest. I mean, I personally don't really like the idea of having sex with a woman after two or three other men have done it. You know, it's like sloppy fourths. Ugh. I mean, I don't like it. This seems to be very much a Negro activity. But I think, yeah, again, it's an interesting meme because it does touch on this idea that there are these women. They know that these Muslims are rapists, and yet they seem to be perfectly happy to invite them into our country. And Andre, he was pointing out that there was a recent article on Vice magazine, and it was talking about how women. This is from Pornhub, which is one of the most famous pornography websites. They found out that most of the people that are searching for this kind of hardcore rape pornography are women, basically. So there does seem to be this inclination amongst women to want to be raped. I think it's an interesting point. I mean, it's an ugly point, but I think it's something which is very interesting. And I was listening to the War Room, and I was listening to those guys talking about it, and one of the guys, he was saying he got himself a girlfriend, and she was into this kind of like hardcore sadistic kind of sex, you know, real kinky, rough kind of stuff, right? And he said the relationship started off like that. And then after a few months, she wasn't into it anymore. And he asked her why. And she said, well, it's because I don't need it, because you're masculine enough. Like, you're telling me what to do. You're, you know, ordering me around, like, I don't know, cook the dinner or whatever, that kind of behavior. So she felt that she didn't need it anymore, which I thought was very interesting. And also, if you listen to a pickup artist like Tom Torero, who slept with a lot of women, I've heard him say that when he gets one of these kind of business women, you know, these executive business women, the kind of woman that is in a position of power and orders men around all day long, when he sleeps with one of them, they generally want him to, you know, have sex with her in a brutal kind of dominating kind of violent way, because they're craving it. I mean, they really, really need it to be pushed down and dominated. So it does seem to me that kind of like a pendulum, you know, you swing in one direction and it's going to swing all the way back in the other direction as well. So I don't think white women biologically are inclined, you know, to be interested in rape or this kind of thing. I mean, obviously it's somewhere in the back of their heads, but it may be true that the society that we've created, or that the Jews have created, it's created such feminized men, and the women are just craving to be put in their places. And it kind of almost sounds like there was a speech that Tucker Carlson did recently, and he was talking about America. He was talking about auto-correction, he's talking about overcompensating. And he was saying, if you look at most car crashes, the guy hits a tree on the other side of the road, right? And what does that mean? It means you're driving along, something gets in the way, you go to swerve around it, but you overcompensate, right? And hit a tree on the other side of the road. And that's how most car crashes happen. So it kind of seems to me the whole rape thing for women, or the interest in the rape meme, which seems to be apparent. I mean, just look at 50 Shades of Grey. It's perhaps an overcompensation, because we've created this weak pussy kind of feminist society. Women don't feel protected anymore. Women don't feel like anybody's looking after them or controlling them. And so they're interested in that. They want that. So that subject matter appears to be right at the bottom of this meme, because like I said, the meme came out of this podcast, The War Room, and it started because of this white rape gang joke. And some girls are into this. You look at Emily Yucas's Twitter page. I was just looking at it just before the show, and she's like, hashtag white Sharia, white rape gangs. I mean, she's like, she even made a song about it. So they've definitely tapped into some kind of Pandora's box here. I don't know.
Well, I think women are naturally submissive, and men are dominant. It's interesting that you brought up Agamemnon there, killing the man so that he could take his wife for his own, as an ancient Aryan custom. I mean, you got that in the Bible as well. You've got Abraham doesn't want to be known as the husband of Sarah in case the Pharaoh kills him and takes Sarah as his wife. So there is obviously a custom of that was common to both the Greeks and common to the Egyptians and common to the Hebrews way back then, 4,000 years ago. So yeah, I find that particularly interesting. And also Simon Shepherd, in his book Sex and Power, has got the results of a survey there done by psychologists, and fantasizing about rape is the most common fantasy that women actually have, is fantasizing about rape. But it's fantasizing about it. It's not it actually happening. It's fantasizing about it. And this is commonly known. A lot of the time when they are raped, they do orgasm, which gives them which is doubly worse for them because they feel body shaming. That's what they call it, body shaming, as if their body has let them down by making them orgasm when they were being raped. The worst time of their lives, their body is telling them they should be enjoying it, which must be very, very hard for a woman to come to terms with. So maybe there is this drive for them to be ravished. And this goes back to if you could kidnap a woman, you could take her off on a horse, then she was yours. You could marry her. This still goes on in the, I think it's either the Carpathian Mountains or the Caucasian Mountains, and the gypsy types there, that you still have to guard your women because they will take one up, put them over the side of the horse, and they'll fly off with them. And if they can do that, then that's it. They've won the right to marry them. So women, maidens, used to be heavily guarded. They wouldn't let these maidens see any men because this was just the custom. And what's grown from that is this these marriage vows, which is giving the consent for sex in these marriage vows. And once that consent is given, then the man can ravish the woman, his wife, and she can have her fantasies of being raped because she's not being raped. Because she gave her consent to the man to marry her at that time with these vows. And this is what women do like, rougher men. They're naturally submissive, so they naturally want a dominant male. But I think it's very dangerous to treat that as if it's not just a fantasy, but a genuine act. And I think it's quite dangerous for people for normies to look at that, or people that have only just come across nationalism to see that and see that it's advocating white rape gangs. I'm not so sure that's a good thing. I can understand the pushing things as much as you can towards the right, so that things which aren't so extreme seem more normal than they did before, pushing that Overton window. But I'm not certain that looking as if we are all a bunch of rapists is going to be that good for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, I mean, but it's definitely sparked a lot of debate. I mean, I will say on the issue of rape, Roosh said something really interesting about it, which made up my mind about it. And he said that a woman's orgasm is unimportant from a biological point of view, because if you think about it, in order to get pregnant, a man has to orgasm, but a woman doesn't really, right? It's not important. It's like a secondary benefit. She can get pregnant without orgasming, and so it seems to me that there must be a part of a woman's mind where she's hardwired to lay on her back and spread her legs and just be impregnated by a dominant man. And, you know, sometimes she enjoys it and it's good, and sometimes she doesn't. Because, you know, when we're talking about rape fantasies, you know, it's like you said, I mean, some women do orgasm when they're raped, but not all of them do. And it kind of makes you wonder, well, do they fantasize about it because they think it's going to be pleasurable, or do they fantasize about it because they want to be dominated by a masculine man, by a powerful man? But if you think about it, if you think about the fact that their pleasure is actually not necessary for them to get pregnant, then it kind of makes sense that the thing is they just want to be taken, right? They just want a strong man. And again, Roosh was talking about this, like, because obviously he's seduced a lot of women, and he said that, you know, sometimes they enjoy it, sometimes they don't, but they still come back for more just because you're an alpha male, you see. So
just let me interject there a minute. I think he's looking at it purely from an evolutionary perspective and from sleeping with as many women as he can. But I would suggest that, okay, the woman's orgasm doesn't have an evolutionary benefit, but it has a benefit in producing a bond between her and her husband on that marriage night. That's the act of marriage. And there needs to be this bond between the man and the woman. That's what it's there for. That's what it's there for, I would suggest, rather than any evolutionary benefit, which shows that there is a creator. Once again, it shows that there's a plan to creation and there is a God, because there's no evolutionary benefit to that. The benefit to that is to provide a bond between husband and wife.
And there may be something in that. So perhaps it takes women, some time to relax, I suppose, to enjoy it more, I suppose. With different women, it may be different. But I think there may be some truth in that she's more likely to enjoy it if she has a deep, loving relationship with the man, I suppose. Whereas the man, for him, it's just like stick it in and off you go. But I think there's definitely a part of their brain which just says to them, okay, this is happening now, just lie back and tolerate it, kind of thing, like a switch that goes off in their head, which is like, okay, yeah, okay, we're doing this now. And I think it probably, I think they probably do fantasize about it, and there's definitely something deep and dark going on there. And the white Sharia meme is definitely the rape gang meme is definitely shoving that in people's faces. So it's good to have a conversation, but I don't. But like you said, I don't. This is the thing that Beardson Beardley said about it. He basically said that this is not a meme which white America is going to accept. Like your typical right wing Republican alt light white Americans, as soon as you mention the word Muslim or Sharia, they're just going to get angry because they all hate Muslims, which is a good thing, right? So this, and you're going to try and explain this thing to them. No, it's not Sharia. It's white Sharia. It's like a joke. It's ironic or whatever. They've already switched off. You already lost them. So, yeah, I don't know. Actually, I haven't finished making the video. I'm going to edit it and upload it. But I made a response to Weave, and my suggestion was to the alt-right that they should make some kind of, or to the Daily Stormer, sorry, they should make some kind of cowboy meme. I mean, cowboys, basically, they're masculine men. And this is a point which I've been thinking for a long time. I don't understand why there aren't more cowboy memes, especially in America. I mean, there are plenty of Nazi memes. There are plenty of Viking memes or barbarian memes. There are plenty of Crusader memes. Where are the cowboys? I mean, this is your typical American masculine heroic culture. It's John Wayne. It's Clint Eastwood. And these guys, they didn't take any crap from their women. So I think if you want to appeal to redneck America, and I say that obviously with affection, then maybe some kind of cowboy meme would be more suitable.
Yeah, we've suggested that before, haven't we, about the cowboy memes. I was just thinking then as well, the old tradition or the old customs, if somebody was raped, then they would not be able to get another husband because they couldn't be married. They were married. They lost their virginity. They were, in effect, married by whoever it was that raped them. And whoever it was that raped them then had to be married to them, had to pay for them, look after them, do everything for them. And then you've got the child. And this gives the incentive to the men to protect their women, to make sure there's no chance that they can be snatched by any invader or any stranger in the area, or even anyone from the member of that tribal clan. They had to be protected so that didn't happen. Because if that did happen, they would have to marry the rapist. Because who else is going to look after them? Who else? Nobody else is going to want to marry them after that, because they're married to, they're in effect married to somebody else. So again, that, then it would be of benefit for them to orgasm as well, because they would then have to be with this man. So yeah, yeah. I think this plays into this arranged marriage idea as well, doesn't it? So if you have an arranged marriage, it's not that you get married because you've fallen in love with someone, or you've fallen in lust with someone. You have to marry who it is you're told you're supposed to be marrying, who was born on the correct date with the stars, and who's in the correct caste, and that your parents approve of, and you then have to marry him. Yeah, they give their consent in the vows, and then that's it. He ravishes her. And she has, and she stays with him, and she would have her orgasm, which would help to cement the bond.
Yeah, or lay back and think of England. I think that's what they used to say, isn't it?
Well, I think we can see where these old that is what they used to say. But I think we can see why we had these old traditions.
Yeah,
I mean, it's rooted in biology, and in what's best for the tribe, the clan, and the family as well. Because you imagine if a woman was raped and she had nobody to look after her after that, she'd be an outcast. She could have a child. A child could die without being paid for. She'd have nobody to go out and earn the food and put the roof over her head. So that was the custom that they had. Again, this is an Old Testament custom. These are Christian customs, which our common law is based upon. I think we'd be better calling for a return to Christian law, Old Testament law, rather than a white Sharia, which sounds like you're calling for a white version of the Quran. And we have the original old Christian Old Testament, which the Quran is ripped off from. And we have our Christian traditions, which is rooted in that law. Alfred the Great's law code was basically the laws from Deuteronomy and Leviticus, and the laws that we had in the country before that, which were called the usages of the country. And he put them together, and that was Alfred the Great's law code. And that did us fine up until the 19th century. And then suddenly we changed, and we started giving all these rights and no responsibilities to the woman. And the woman, as we know, the woman thinks differently to us. Women think emotionally. They don't think logically. They're not going to make the right decisions. And if they're given their chance to leave their husband and still have the child paid for, then they're going to do that. Which we see now. We can see for the last 100 years why it was so important that divorce was not allowed unless there was adultery, and the children had to stay with the father. We can see the wisdom in that custom now, looking back at the last century, looking at the divorce rate now, and the amount of fathers who no longer see their children. And their children who no longer have a mother and father there and a stable home. You think for how many generations children have been guaranteed of having a stable home, and now at least half of them don't have a stable home. They don't have a foundation. The thing that should just be secured for them. They know they're going to be secure. Their mother and father are going to be there. The home breaks up. It's life-shattering for a child for that to happen. And if women weren't allowed to just have this no-fault divorce, and we're told, no, you're not going to have your children if you divorce your husband, we wouldn't have all these divorces, and their children would grow up with a mother and father there, and they would be far more likely to then provide a stable home for their own children and the next generation. And the whole of society would benefit from it. Instead of that, we've just decided to let women run wild, basically, and not have to face up to any of the consequences of their bad decisions.
Yeah, and what was I going to say? Yeah, a whole generation of kids basically grows up knowing that mommy and daddy didn't love each other enough to stay together, which is sad. But I think one of the problems that I have with the white Sharia meme in general, it does seem to, there are some interesting points that they're making, but it does seem to edge into the realm of misogyny and just hating women just for the sake of hating women. I mean, I agree with so many of the points, but it's a subtle issue, and it does seem to at times cross over into that realm. So, I mean, I just want to make it clear. I mean, from my perspective, and from the perspective of at least what they say in the Hare Krishna movement, the idea is simply that women are children. They're children, and their minds, their brains don't develop above the age of 14. They just don't. That's it. You know, when you're talking, and actually, once you start thinking this way, and you talk to older women, and you kind of look at them, and you're like, yeah, it kind of is like talking to a 14-year-old, you know. They, you know, a 14-year-old with more experience and more knowledge, but still like the same emotions and the same. They're just kids, right? And I totally recognize that they have a vast amount of power, and I recognize that some of their behavior is extremely destructive. And I, you know, obviously, I think women like Angela Merkel. You know, they need to be punished for their crimes against the white race. I'm not cucking out on that, but I think as a subtle point, we have to remember that they're just children, because otherwise what you're doing is you're putting them above you, and you're adopting a victim mentality as a man, and you're like pointing upwards at them. Oh, you horrible women, you evil feminists, and you're putting them above you psychologically, and we shouldn't be doing that. We should realize that naturally we're the ones on top and they're the ones below. And from a historical point of view, it's not really their fault, to be honest, that they are in the position they're in. They're only running around the place acting like sluts and whores because we've let them do it. Because we listen to the Jew whispering in our ear, saying, you know, women's rights. And we were like dumb goyim. We were just like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And, you know, and then we just let them run free. So historically, it's our fault. It is our fault as men. And we need to recognize that. And that understanding should, you know, color or influence every time we make these harsh judgments against these women, because we had society, we had the whole world in the palm of our hands. We had a European empire. We'd conquered the entire planet, and we let it go in the space of 100 years. And, why? Because we listened to the Jew whispering in our ear. And, so yeah, at the end of the day, it's our fault. And also, I mean, I got to say that as far as like day-to-day dealing with ladies in general, I personally find that's the best way to deal with them, actually. When they start spouting these feminist opinions, right, I never take them seriously. I never get angry with them or talk to them like in the same way that I talk to a man. Because I just think, well, you're just a child, you know. So I always just say something sarcastic like, oh, right. Oh, is that what you think? Oh, okay, dear. Yeah, lovely. Oh, that's nice. You know, it's kind of just sweep it aside. Like, yeah, your opinion doesn't really matter to me. And that's, you know, from a psychological point of view, that seems to work really effectively with these people. Because then they kind of laugh and it becomes a... more of a flirtatious thing or whatever. They don't see that you become, like, if you become upset with them when they say some, they're going, oh, we're women and we got the vote and da, da, da. And if you get angry at them, then you are submitting. You're saying, yes, you have power over me. But if you just like, oh yeah, all right, sweetheart. Yeah. If that's what you want to believe, you know, just dismiss it with a wave of your hand in like a jokey kind of way. Then, you know, 9 times out of 10, it just works like a dream. They're just like,
yeah,
it just laughs.
It does. they're not used to men being like that, but they know that that is the correct way to be. Almost chauvinistic like, and they're shocked, but they laugh. They laugh.
They love it.
They don't get upset. They laugh. But just to what you were saying there about women being like children. Well, men are more evolved. We are more evolved than women. We continue to evolve in the womb. Women, the females get to a certain stage and males continue evolving after that stage. So we are more evolved than women for a start. That's a basic biological fact that they don't like to be reminded.
Next time I talk to a woman, I'm just going to tell her that she gave up in the womb.
Yeah, that's a good one. Another thing I think we ought to remember is we mustn't become like our enemy. And the battle is an internal battle. It's a spiritual battle that manifests in the physical world. And the whole point of it is not to become like the Jew, not to become physically like our enemy. Don't interbreed with the non-whites so that your bloodline becomes like them. Don't become mentally like them. Don't become greedy and covetous and materialistic. And don't become spiritually like them either, and lose the traits of humanity. Mercy, justice, charity, love, human kindness. All those things we mustn't lose, because if we do lose them, then the Jew wins. What would a world be like if we lost all those things? If we became just like our enemy and we became just like the Jews, the world wouldn't be worth saving. And in a few generations, we'd all be non-white as well on top of that. But the world would not be worth saving if we gave in and became like them. So I think that's an important thing to remember as well.
Yeah, and also another point is this whole rape gang meme. Now, like we just said about the whole Achilles and, you know, stealing a woman, I could understand that is kind of Aryan, or I can accept it. You know, you kill a man, you steal his wife, or you steal his daughter and you marry her, because that's like a one-on-one thing. But the idea of multiple men raping one woman, I mean, that's just Negro behavior. This is literally like from Africa. And this is really one of the great differences between black men and white men, and the difference is that white men are extremely jealous and protective of their women. They have a strong emotional bond with their women and they protect them. But the Africans, they don't have that at all. They just, like, you look at some of these tribal cultures in Africa, they have like one building or hut, you know, where all the women sleep, and then one hut where all the men sleep. And everyone just screws everybody else. You know, it's like nobody knows who your dad is. It's like a communal orgy. And then all the kids just run around the place and they get raised, you know, by the community. And that's it. They're not jealous or protective of their women. And they bring the same culture over to America and over to Europe. You see the blacks, a black guy, he gets a girlfriend. He'll bring her into the gang and share her around with the other men. Why? Because he doesn't care about her. He's not capable of loving her. He just sees her as, you know, an object to have sex with. And then he just shares around with the other men. So that's a Negro culture. And to suggest that white men should do the same. You know, it's a subtle point. I can't believe we've got to a position where we're talking about different types of rape. But yeah, there you go. It's a different type of rape.
We need to, I think the answer is to remember who we are. Stop trying to be someone else. Just remember who we are. And once we remember who we are, then we can rise above all this and we will win. We just need to remember that we are white. And not try and emulate these others, whether it's emulating Muslims or emulating Negroes or emulating Jews. It's all wrong. We need to be white and we need to be Aryan. And when we are Aryan, that's when we win. Subal, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much listeners for listening. Do please remember that we do accept donations, and at the Radio Aryan site at the top of the left hand sidebar you'll find a link to our Bitcoin wallet. We do appreciate donations, and so does Morgoth over at Morgoth Review, who kindly also hosts us. You can also find us at the Purity Spiral as well. Now, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you all next time, and we hope you all have a wonderful week ahead of you.
Alternative to the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.